Today's daf from Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Beis, and we're holding right at the bottom at the Tanur Rabbanan of Yud Aleph Amud Beit. So let me just remind you, because what we're going to do right now is we have a Braita that seems to be saying exactly the same thing as our Mishnah said, which was that if a woman had already gone to the Chuppah, that she has a din of a Nesu'ah. And therefore, even if the husband had died immediately or divorced her immediately, and we have no reason to believe that they ever had the intimacy, nonetheless, she has a din of a ba'ula, and there's no ta'anat betulim. Now, our braita that we're about to quote has the same case, except with one added additional feature. And that added feature is that there were actually witnesses that they had never been alone together long enough for them to have consummated the marriage. That's the difference, the only difference. So Tana Rabban. Kinasari shon l'shum nisui. So she's got this first husband. They take her, go to the chuppah, and we have Aiden that they were never alone together before he dropped dead or before he gave her a get. Yeshla Aidim shalom nistera, or maybe they were together for a minute, but not long enough as it could have been enough for them to have consummated the marriage. The same words of our Mishnah. The new husband, the second husband, is unable to have any kind of tainas about Besulim, and he was supposed to have assumed that her ketuvah is the ketuvah of a Ba'ula, because after all, same language as the Mishnah, because after all, Sharei Kinasa Rishon, she already is considered to be a married woman. And we have, remember, the same two pshatim that we had yesterday. According to the Yerushalmi, it is not a question of whether, in fact, is she a betula or not. It's the very reality of having been to the chuppah, and she's now called a married woman. And therefore, by definition, she doesn't have the maila, or the lush of the Yerushalmi, she doesn't have the chen of a betula. And that's the reason that she would only get a mana anyway. So therefore, he can't tie into anything about her. In our sugya, the assumptions are in Rashi and Tosfos that even though there were witnesses, he had no right to make those kind of assumptions that she was a bitula, because the bottom line is, you know, he should have figured they're trying to make her more meaningful, the marriage should be more meaningful to him, but that it was all along, he was supposed to understand that she already had been married, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, ba'ula. So, turns around Rabba and says, well, based on this braita, zot omeret, kinasaba chaskat betula v'nibtzeit ba'ula, yesh la ketuvah mana. I mean, what the braita is saying is that even though you thought, I mean, but you had witnesses, right? You had witnesses that she was a betula, and you had every right, you say, therefore, to assume that she was a betula. And it turns out that she is a betula. Nonetheless, the braita says you cannot claim that you don't have to pay her her mana. You will have to pay her mana because she was already kansa rishon. So that's the point of saying sharei kansa. He already was koneser. So what's he going to taina? You cannot take the ksuva, even if he said, well, I gave her a ksuva of a betula. Well, all you'd be able to do is to turn it into a ksuva from a matayim to a mana. Fine. That nobody's arguing with him about. She's not arguing. The only question over here, does he have a right to say that this was a mekachtos and so on? And he could tell her that she shouldn't what? She shouldn't get a mana of an almana? Not nobody said. So you see that even though the chosin assumed that she's a betula, he's never going to be able to say that it's a mekachtos. He doesn't have to pay her anything. The most he can say is, okay, well, I'm not going to keep this ketuvah matayim. We're reducing it to a mana. Says Ravashi, well, this is a very strange place to bring a riot to that, isn't it? It could very well be that under normal circumstances, if a woman is assumed to be a betula, so maybe she doesn't get anything. But this is different. I mean, the Mishnah even, the Brice even says why it's different. It says, Sharei Kansa Rishon. So you had no right to assume it. But suppose you did have a right to assume it, and there was general assumption that she was a betula. How could you prove from here that you don't have a taina to reduce it from even more than a mana. Maybe she would get nothing. You can't bring a raya from this case. Ask the Gemara, but hold on a second. Isn't there a serious question as to whether she had slept with somebody after they were already mu'urasim? I mean, the bottom line is there are witnesses that she was a betula, and that right now, when he takes her, she's a betula. So why doesn't he have to go to Beis Din in order to make sure that people would come forth so that we would find out if she was actually a suratim or not? I mean, the way that you said it is ain't not to him, and therefore there's nothing to think about, and he doesn't have to go to Beis Din and so on. According to Tosis, we're asking, we should actually make it a problem and give him the opportunity to be mavatal the ketuva in order that he should go to Beit Din. Why do we say that he doesn't have to go to Beit Din? Rashi understands that we're talking about over here, the ones who said that she still gets a ketuva and is not considered to be a mekach toros anyway. So that's what we're assuming over here. We're not going to change that whole halacha. But since it says over here, he doesn't have any reason to come to Beis Din, basically, because it says, Eino tanat betulim. That's a problem. It should say, let him come to Beis Din. Omer of Sharbia, we're talking about over here. What happened was, is that as soon as he had been ma'aris her, he stayed with her. And therefore, there was never any time that there was an actual chashash that she would have been nivelet tachtav. So, and that's in order, why do we make such a crazy case? In order to avoid the problem of, okay, what about the other issue of Isser? So we're talking about over here entirely in terms of the normal Ta'anat Betulim, and the issue is purely whether he had a right to assume that she was a Betula or not. Now, the entire difference, remember, between the Braita and the Mishnah was that in the case of the Braita, there were witnesses who said that with her first husband, she had never been alone long enough for them to have consummated the marriage. And the first case which we had, which was exactly the same, there were no witnesses. It was just that everybody knew, so to speak, but nobody came forward and say, I'm ready to stand up in court and say that they had never been alone. That's the only difference, right? So now the same exact discussion could have taken place on the Mishnah. And in fact, there was an Ika de Matin La Mitnitin, that this whole discussion that we just had, that you could see from here, that you can, she still gets a mana, some actually had the discussion on the Mishnah. Here's the Mishnah, to remind you. Betulah managru shavakalutzam ktuvatan mana, and if it's min anasuin, and ein latanat betulim. So how could we have a case like that? How would she have already been married and be a betulah? Obviously, I mean, that's got to be the case. She is a nesua, but she's not a nivelet. And based on that, we have exactly the same Gemara repeating itself. So Rabba said, yep, what do you see from here? That if a man assumes that a woman is a betula, and she's not, she still gets a mana, because it's ain't not not betulim. Whereas Rav Ashi says, no, I say she doesn't get a darn thing, not a penny. And Liola Memelach Abiyamad Let Laklal, normally, if the assumption was that she's a Petula, she wouldn't get anything. And the whole thing could be a Mekach Ta'ud, but Shaini Akash, Reinichle Salachupa. And this case is different. He was crazy. Why did he think he's going to pay Matayim for a woman who's a Bula? Well, what about the other problem, which we raise here as well? Velechu Shema Tachtav Zinta. So what about the question of maybe she was Mizana? And then the same answer. Now, these two pieces of Gemara were exactly the same. Are they interchangeable? No, they're not interchangeable. Why? Because man de matnila braita, it's true that the way we had it originally, they are interchangeable in the sense that it definitely would still apply. So if it applies in the braisa, where there are even witnesses, and still the guy has no ta'anat betulim, and would still give her a mana, kol shekein in the Mishnah, where there were no witnesses. But according to the second approach, the whole discussion was only held on the Mishnah, where there were no witnesses. So we tell the guy, look, you're an idiot. Why in the world would you have thought that a married woman is a betula. And don't tell me why. I know he died right away. And so you know whether there was an opportunity to consummate the marriage. I mean, come on. That's your mistake. But on the Braita, it was obvious that there's a big difference. Over there, the guy could say, I do have a tanat betulim. Mishum demotzi amalana eidim samche. He could have said, I have a very good reason to have believed that she was a betula. And over there, Rabba would have had a good point to say, well, you see, if you take a woman assuming that she's a betula and she isn't, you're still going to have to pay a money. And that would have meant to Rav Ashi, what would Rav Ashi say? Well, you're being stupid because she was married. I mean, I'm being stupid. I have witnesses. That's not called being stupid. And therefore, it would make a tremendous difference whether we paskin like the first approach or we paskin like the second approach. Lemaisa, the halacha is that it's a mekachtot in a normal case, and she does not have a ktuva at all, which means that the halacha is going according to the first lashon, that it was even benogea the braisa, because it was there that Rav Ashi explained why you get nothing and in a normal case, ever. In which case, the idea of a betula, where you had a good reason to assume she's a betula, there is, in fact, no betula. And now we're ready for a very special moment with our favorite kapitan.
up. Azok tehelaka mishnah.
Ha'ochel etzel chamiv biyudah shelo beedim. So finally we get to this mishnah we've discussed before, that the minhag in Yehuda was that the chosen and the kala should be alone. And we went through the whole way that this developed originally, and that this was a way to make sure that the gezeira of the Romans, of which the officials were allowed to take the bride, that this would not end up answering a woman in the marriage, and that they would, and they maintained it in order that you don't go into a marriage without having any familiarity with the kala, and that therefore they made certain that the kala was tahora. They even made a bracha beforehand, so that if they, in the end, they slept together, which is probably what was going to happen, that there wouldn't be any problems in that, and that it would be just a regular bu'ula of with the correct chuppah, because it was in that house, and then they would just do the marriage as sort of post-marriage. But because of that, obviously, if you don't have witnesses that you were not alone with the kala, so you can never have a tain of betulim, because we will say, excuse me, sir, but after having had a night with her, you got a lot of nerve coming around and saying that, well, she wasn't a betula, no kidding. So therefore, you cannot have any kind of taina, because the minhag was in Yehuda that you're mityachedima. Now, the question over here is that the language of the Mishnah, which is ha'ochel etzel chamiv, if somebody does that, is mashma that wasn't necessarily a norm. In other words, it doesn't mean anywhere in Yehuda that you would not have a right to have ta'anat betulim. It's saying in the event that you were among that part of the population that did this minhag and eating by the father-in-law and staying over there and so on, then you would not. So which means that it's not a din in Yehuda, it's a din in the facts of what you did. So you see very clearly that even in Yehuda, this was not universal. There were mikomot. Some places did this and some places did not. And it all depends on the reality of whether you were alone with the kala. Kitatani Omer of Yehuda, B'Yehuda b'Rishona, היו מייחדים את החתן ואת הכלה שעה אחת קודם לכניסתם לחופה, כדי שיהיה ליבו גס בה. So they used to do that in order for him to feel at home with her. In the Galil, they didn't do that kind of thing. The Galil were much simpler people, and they assumed people can get along, they'll work it out. Plus, in the Galil, they did not generally try to steal money from each other, make false claims that she was a ba'ula or whatever. And they didn't have any kind of chashash that we always need to outsmart the other party. That's the kind of thing that happens when you live in the big towns and you're around Yerushalayim and so on. It's dangerous, dangerous for your health. So in Yehuda, for that matter, it was even worse than that. They would have these two shushbinim, some shushbinim, better called the private detectives. So they used to man their shushbinim. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a shushbin to Adam HaRishon. You know, I'm sure that the point of his shushbinus was not to make sure that Adam HaRishon didn't have a phony sheet there, you know, to be able to claim to him, hey, you gave me a woman who was not a betula. So obviously the shushbinin was this idea of something very positive, something very sweet, something very nice, you know, make sure that everything is taken care of and that you feel important and what. Best man kind of thing. But in Yehuda, the shushbin was actually a private detective. And the point of the shushbin was to make sure that the other party wasn't playing hanky-panky so that the Kala undoubtedly was actually a whore from somewhere. And she brought along a phony sheet that was all bloodstained to show how pure, pristine she is. And she spread it out over the bed to fool the poor chassan, you know. Or the chassan may have carried in a phony sheet so that he could get rid of the real sheet and then claim, well, looky, looky, this girl doesn't have any dam psulim, and so on and so forth. So therefore, they would make sure that the other party was mushmash, where they felt them down. I mean, that's the literal lush. Doesn't mean they literally did that. Mushmash means that the maisim were mushmashim, like we say, yimashmesh b'maasav. But I mean, the word mushmash is pretty bad. It means we gave them a full body search and make sure that they weren't sneaking in anything into the bridal suite. But they didn't do stuff like that in the Galil, for heaven's sakes. The Galil lo ayu osim kein, and they trusted each other. Yehuda b'rishona, ayu ha-shushbinim yeshenim b'bayit shechatan v'kala yeshenim ba. And what's more, they wanted to make sure that this would be, there would be no chance to cool off if there were tainas or whatever. And also whatever they were going to be doing supposedly for the chassan and kala. So they did not consider it to be a violation of privacy to be sleeping there in the same house when that would disturb the chassan and kala. It's a modern world, you know. But Begalil lo hayu osin ken. Begalil, they certainly would never do anything like that. And therefore, there was a completely different hanhaga. Now, question is, of course, what do you mean, lo hayu osin ken? Of course, lo hayu osin ken. They didn't have shushbinin. So where would the shushbinin be sleeping if they didn't have shushbinin? So, I mean, the pashtus is that in Galil, they may have had shushbinin that were there just, you know, to make them feel good and so on. It's just saying that even though they had those kind of people, they would certainly not allow anybody else to be in the house with them. And that was a violation of common privacy. So that they didn't do. But anyway, then we come up with this opaque statement. Whatever that's supposed to mean. Anybody who didn't do this minhag can't say a tarat betulim. The Gemara is going to ask, what in the world is that supposed to mean? What are you referring to? Didn't do what minhag? You referring back to the reisha about the way they did things in Yehuda? I mean, then it should have said anybody who was noeg that way does not have a tanat betulim because he can't claim that she was a virgin if he's been alone with her. So that wouldn't make sense. Then it should have said anybody who is noeg, not anybody who's not noeg. Ella, what are you going to say? That it's going on the seifa? Well, what do you mean called shalom noeg kiminig? That's not the point. And the seifa, who's the one that would be having the tanat betulim? It would be the chassan. So what it should say is that if the chassan was not searched before, then he can't say anything because we don't trust him. Because that was the whole point of having the shushbinin. But why does it say koshal noah kamina gazer that each one of them has shushbinin? It's only nogea his being absolutely checked out by the kala's family, not koshal noah kamina gazer, which is mashmah that he would have made sure that there were shushbinin for her. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Omer abayat, well, the Yolam HaReisha, yeah, it's going back to the beginning, and it was just a mistake. It should have said, Kol Shenahag Minag Zeh, anybody who has that minag can't have Tanat Petulim. Omer LeRava, what a brilliant answer. Only one tiny problem. It does that. It says the exact opposite. You know, but other than that, I think you're a genius. So it does say Kol Shalonahag now, doesn't it? So, I mean, we're trying to figure out what that would mean, not what you're changing of the Gersa would mean. However, I was able to get you a full scholarship to the seminary, if you'd like to attend there, where you could just change Gersas whenever you want. What kind of answer is that? Anyway, so what then would the answer be? I'll tell you. Hello, my Rava. What the Braita was saying is that Kol Shelo Nahag, meaning any, we just finished talking about the Galil. If you did not act like a Nahag, the Minag of the Galil in the Galil, then if you acted like someone who comes from Yehuda in the Galil, so then the point is not that it's in Yehuda, in the Galil, and therefore the social strictures that would be applicable in the Galil would mean that we would never think that you would be sleeping with your kala, and it would not be acceptable the way it was acceptable in Yehuda. No, that's not true. If you were not noyeg, the minig of the Galil in the Galil, then you're just as bad off as if you had that minig as in Yehuda. There's no difference. That's what it's coming to tell me.
Rebbe, isn't this what happened in Yehuda, a complete breakdown of marriage? I mean, before you go into the chuppah, there's a guy who checks you down to make sure she's not taking something in. It's like a betrayal of the whole integrity of what marriage should be.
Not if you're assuming that that's the way marriage has to work out. If there's Romans there, they're going to rape your wife. So then that's why we made a bracha before. We did everything right. We did everything la'alacha. But we weren't mefarsimits, and nobody knows that they had a private marriage, basically. That way, that's how the whole thing started, because of the Romans. Anyway, Ravashi Amar La'olam HaSeifa. No, it is referring, but it should say Kol Shelo Mushmash and not Kol Shelo Nahag. Fine. We're back to our Kapitan. Now, the fact that it takes him a little bit of time to respond, there's no reason to avoid taking a trip on Richie's ship. I mean, certainly when he's at the helm, you can be assured of his being completely awake. And in fact, rumors of his keeping a bottle of Talisker nearby are completely and totally false. There's nothing to worry about. You can even tell from the insurance policy on his yacht. There's no difference between a widow, even if she's from a very chosh of a family of Kohanim. There's no difference in the amount of the ketuvah. It's still a mana. And this, despite the fact that the Beit Din shel Kohanim, hayugovim lebetula, 400 zuz. So there was a difference in that bedavka, the Beis Din of Kohanim, they would insist if you're going to marry a betula from a Kohen family, it's double the price. Or forget it. Go find yourself some useless Yisraelite. So they would increase the price of the ketuvah. V'lo michu biyadam chachamim. And the chachamim had no objection. Now, obviously, no objection. You can ask whatever you want for a ketuvah, can't you? You can ask $2 million for a ketuvah. But, as Tosis explains, the difference is that if there's an additional fee to the ketuvah, it's called a tosefet, and you would have to put it in the clause of the tosefet, which we put into every ketuvah. Vahosif lo min delay, et cetera, that this is what the chosen added to the money that was coming in, and my chosh of a wife, and oftentimes they just put an exaggerated schumim there. My wonderful wife would get $2 million, Okay, but normally the Tosefet was a serious discussion of how much he's going to get. So who cares what they want? Just fine. But here it wasn't put in as a Tosefet. Over here, they made it the takana of the basic ketuvah. So let's say that this was a place where they didn't used to write a ketuvah, and they just used to allow the ketuvah, the tnae ha-ketuvah, pi-bezda, to be in effect, which is the case even in the event that you didn't write the ketuvah. They would still collect 400 zuz. That's the point that the Chachamim were not protesting. It means that they could actually collect it as the basis of the ketubah. Furthermore, since they didn't write that it's a tosefet, so then you could say, if not for the closing of the mission, you could say, there's a mistake in the ksuvah. The ksuvah says, arba meot dechazi lechi, says Tosfos. The amount that is ro'ui for you. Well, it's not ro'ui for me. This was an addition. So therefore, the chiddush is that even though you wrote that language of a standard ksuva on a 400 zuz ksuva, that they accepted the language of chazi lechi in the sense that if they want to set a higher value for the yichus of the kahuna, so then that is what is ro'ui. That's the chiddush in both of those situations of our Mishnah. Now, in the Braita, it says something which is not the case in the Mishnah. The Braita claims that the betulah of the Kohanim, they insisted on 400, and it adds the almanah of the Kohanim, they insisted on 200. But the Mishnah, as the Gemara, obviously the Mishnah just said exactly the opposite. The Mishnah wrote, Vanantanan, went out of our way to make it clear that achat amanat Yisrael, v'achat amanat Kohanim, k'tuvat amana. So how do you come along with this completely other story? Omer Ravashi, this is a historical braita. The truth is that there were two separate takanot legabe the dinim of an almona of a coin. And what the braita is saying is absolutely correct. Initially, when they made the takana for the betula of arba meod zuz, they ran into problems. Now, this is our another example. We've spoken about the idea that the ketuva is a gradually emerging document. One of the changes that happened historically is that the initial ketuva, which is exactly the way the Mishnah brings it here, went through a period of experimentation. So initially, it's true that the betulah took arba meot zuz and the almana took only a mana, and that ended up the people would treat the almanot without respect because of the fact that they have so little value, and it was easy for them to be divorced. Well, after all, I mean, everybody knows, look at the difference between a betulah and almanah. They're worth one quarter of the value. So because of that, they made a takana, which is not reflected in the Mishnah, that, well, the only way we're going to be able to actually maintain 400 zuz for a betulah is by compensating the almana so that she shouldn't be suffering because of it. So then they went ahead and they made this braita takana, which was that the almana should get double the price of a Yisrael's almana. And then what happened is that people said, man, if I can get a besula for the same price, I ain't going in for the kahuna. Let me tell you, I'd much rather have a betula than a kohenet. So because of that, they saw that kiva the chos of the kaparshin minayim, people would not marry the almanas of kohenim. It was too expensive. The amrei, they would say, listen, for the same price of an almanat kohenim, I'm going to go in on this betula about Yisrael. So then they realized that, well, it's not going to be sustainable. So they had to put it back to the way it was. This braita is a testimony to the period in between of the trying things out, where they were trying to see whether they could also secure some additional respect for the almanas, but there wasn't really what to do. And then we go on in the Mishnah, we say the Beit Din of Kohanim, they would take 400. Omer Bira Mishmo, this is nothing to do with a Beit Din of Kohanim. You're making it sound like it requires a Beit Din and so on. It's basically a determination that any family can make if they, in fact, are miyuchasot. And it's lo Beit Din shel Kohanim bovad amru, afilo mishpachot amiyuchasot b'Yisrael. If they want to take on themselves that they view their family as being miyuchas, and therefore anybody that marries into them is coming in on the basis of understanding that a ketuva in our family is 400, not 200 for a betulah, they can be osin, and we will support the lashon of the chazilich, that it's indeed ru'ui for you. Ask the Gemara, but that's not really true, because it says in a braita that harotzeh, that if you have a family that's choshev and they want to act the way that Kohanim act, but now it gives examples. For instance, a Bat Yisrael, and she goes and marries a Kohen, or a Bat Kohen goes and marries a Yisrael of these kind of families. So then they can do. So what does that mean? Then they can do. In other words, even in the event that you've got a tzad that isn't the kahuna, you could still insist that you are a very miyuchas person and you should be treated as if this was the family of the kahuna. But that's only because there's at least a kohen involved, either on the woman's side or on the man's side. But it doesn't say you can do this straight out. Even if nobody's a kohen, it's mashma that it's only an extension of the idea that if you're already getting involved with the kahuna, so then you have a right to say that I come from a very chashuv family as well. So it's mashma that is davka in this case of the Bat Yisrael, the kohen, and the Bat Kohen Yisrael, where at least over there you have at least one side of this marriage that is a kahuna. But you couldn't just, if you're taking a Yisrael, you can't just say as a Bas Yisrael, Yisrael, you wouldn't be able to do that. So you said that anybody who is Miyuchas can do that for themselves and not do it because they're involved with Kohenim. No. It says, you don't understand. The Mishnah was talking about a lomi boy. In other words, I don't even need to tell you that in the case of a Bas Yisrael, who is going ahead and marrying into a Yisrael, that over there, I mean, what's he going to say? You married someone as great as you. I have brought you up in the world. And therefore, what right do you have to insist on a higher ksuva because you are a better family? Okay, so over there, I would say, since he has nothing to counter her insistence that she is very valuable and her family is very valuable and you should give her 400 zuz. Even in that case, but I would have thought a Bas Yisrael to a Kohen. So over there, the Kohen can say to her, oh, come off it. You should be grateful to me that I'm willing to even look at a Bas Yisrael, you know, good dick, and now you're coming and insisting you're such an important family that you should get 400 zuz. You have the nerve to say this to a Kohen. Even, that's what the Mishnah says, even there you can say it to a Kohen. Woo! Notice that Barnea's hung his head. No more waving the drinks at me.
Maybe is this an extension? Is this extension of Gezerah of Mei time? And that's the first question. The second, why not just add Tosefis if they can put a family?
To add a Tosefis doesn't prove anything. I want to say to Chazilechi, this is what is Roy for you. Don't give us your volunteerism. We don't need your volunteerism. You want to walk into the door of this house, put up or shut up.
So who made this gezerah? Was this an extension of the gezerah or what?
No, because since it's not really a gezerah. That's the point. This is a understanding of the nature of what is involved in ketubah, that it's the way in which we assure the interrelationship, smooth interrelationship with the chashivas for marriage. In that sense, yes, it is an extension. But that you could set standards that are social standards for ksuva. Fine, tremendous kiddush. But the mission is only coming to tell me that even there, but maybe you would have thought in the case of Bas Yisrael Kohen, where he says, I'm making you a Bas Kohen, and now you're going to be eating truma, you have the chutzpah, maybe over there I would say you can't. That's why it mentions at kahuna. But it certainly can be done in the case of Yisrael. Richie is on absolutely overtime today. Whew. Go for it. Listen, that's why Zoom moved the dock right on top of your head. You know, in case you want to come up with any complaints, just look up and see what you
is waiting.
Now we finally get to, for the first time, to court cases. Because until this time, we had lots of cases where we heard about a suit, legabe, the ksuva, from the point of view of the chosan. And there apparently was never any dispute as to what happened. The dispute was whether she was a betula or not. But that's a very small proportion of cases. There's plenty of reasons that she could give for her ketuva not being affected, despite not being able to argue with the facts. So that's what we want to talk about now. So here, there's no argument about the issue. He did not find betulim. And she says, yes, it's true. you didn't find betulim, and it was a terrible thing, but I was raped after you had already given me erusin. I mean, I didn't want to tell you, obviously, but it's not my problem, it's your problem, because you had already bought the field, so to speak. Remember, the kicha kicha mi stay up front will always refer to it as you bought the field. So if you bought a field, and then before you got a chance to plow the field, it was flooded and destroyed, well, you're going to go back to the seller, and you're going to say, you sold me a no-good field, I wasn't able to plow the field? That's exactly what happened over here. You bought a perfectly good field. You could have plowed the field. You waited until there was a storm, and now there's nothing to plow. That's your problem. That's nobody else you can complain to. So therefore, Nistachafa Sadeo, it was his field that got blown away by the flood. And he says, well, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing, I don't owe you a penny. How do I know that this didn't happen afterwards? And then you would even be asura to me. Then this is going according to the way that we just learned on yesterday's daf, and on today's daf that we did this, the last part of before, that if you took her, assuming that she was a bitula, and she wasn't, so over there, Rav Ashi, we came and we answered Rav Chiya Bar Rava, and we said, you cannot make any kind of diukim over there, but the shita, there was one shita that she does get a ksuva mana, that was Rav Chiya Bar Rava. Then we tried to bring a riot to it, and we said, you can't bring a riot, because in that case, she actually had gone to we had the brides and we had the Mishnah, but we ended up with a machloket. So this Gemara is assuming that the halacha is that I don't have to pay her anything. And he's saying, I am mikhi mekach ta'ut. Mekach ta'ut, remember, we had the whole two different ways of reading this Mishnah. Would it have meant a mekach ta'ut from matayim to amana? And then Rava's taina saying, never means that. The lashon of mekach ta'ut always means nothing. Doesn't mean partially a mekach ta'ut. So now, what's the halacha over here? Who do we believe? So Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer Omrim, we believe her. Now, why in the world should we believe her? The first thing that crosses your mind is that the reason that we would believe her is because she says she knows what happened. And he says, well, I don't know. How do I know? So, okay, I mean, you're saying, I don't know. Well, I'm telling you, I do know. That is called Bari Vashema. So, maybe the Mishnah is built around the assumption of Bari Vashema, Bari Adif. Somebody who says they know is going to be believed over someone who says, well, I don't really know. So if you hold it under any and all circumstances, we would say, Hamotzi Michaveiro Alav Araya. Prove to me. You want me to pay you a ketuvah? Prove to me. That's called Hamotzi Michaveiro. You want my money. If you want my money, then you're going to have to show me why I should pay you. But if you hold that Bari Vashema Bari Adif is Adif even above sufficiently to be Motzi Mamon, so apparently that must be what Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer hold. They say Ne'emenet. The Gemara will show us that it's a lot more complicated than that. But that's what we're assuming now. Rabbi Yoshua says, look, the world lives on truth, you know? Are we living on this woman's narrative? Is that our truth? I would say, gentlemen, no. Lomi pia anu chayin. Life on this planet is not coming from her mouth. And therefore, I would say, who cares what she says? Arezu b'chazkat b'ulah shalot titares. We have every reason to assume that she was already not a betula before they even got married. She tried to fool him, unless she can prove what she says. Because of the rule, let her bring the raya. Now, taking out all of the other questions that are involved over here, because remember that this case is much more complex because it involves Isser as well. I mean, what about in cases where it would be nogei? Is being a Kohen, let's say, right? So would we say that since Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer says she's ne'emenes, so he doesn't have to be cheshesh, that she was actually raped afterwards, and a rape victim is a surah to a kohen. I mean, let's strip this down now, get back to normal cases where there are no other issues, and we'll see that there are other issues that I haven't mentioned yet that make this case more complicated. So let's take the classic case. A guy says, you owe me $100. The other guy says, I don't know. I can't remember. I remember we talked about you're making me a loan. I don't remember if I ever took the money or not. Any idea? So Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna says, well, if you can't say that I don't owe you the money, and he knows that you do owe him the money, pay up. So Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna amri chayab, and Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan say patur. So, I mean, why would they say chayab? Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda would say chayab, even though you don't have any raya, apparently they hold bori v'shema, bori adif. If somebody knows something which you can't say isn't true, and you don't know, and you admit you don't have the facts, so then there's no argument. If there's no argument, there's no case. Why don't you just pay? Whereas Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan say, well, there's always, by definition, an argument because there's a chazaka. The money is currently in my bank account and not your bank account, and you want to remove it from my bank account to your bank account. That is a case, and you have to present proof to take it out of my bank account. So ukimamoni becheskas more. I don't need to have a taina. The money has a chazaka, and it is currently mine until proven otherwise. And that's the whole point of hamotzi michevero olav araya. That's a cheskat mamon, not a cheska of ne'emanut. You want to change a chazaka? Fine. Now, Omer le'abaya l'Rabbi Yosef. I want to explain to you that Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, who say that you're chayav, would only be true according to Shmuel, and that we would actually say bori v'shema bori adif. Why do you say Shmuel would hold that? The Tanan. Because we have the Mishnah, which is coming up tomorrow, and the Mishnah says over there that, let's say, we're not talking about a Ta'anat Betuli. We're talking about a woman who wasn't married, and she's quite obviously pregnant. So now we want to know whether this child is perhaps a mamzer, since we have no idea who impregnated her. It might as well have been somebody who was Osir Lavo Bekahal. So we ask her, who got you pregnant? Mati Voshal Uberzek. What's the din of this Uber? And she says, oh man, this father was a Kohen. He was amazing. Best Yichus in the world, you know? And no problem whatsoever with his Yichus. So Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Eliezer say over there as well that she is Ne'emenet and that he's considered to be kosher Yichus. Even in that case as well. So this basically seems to be about the same idea, right? That even where we're talking about the pregnancy, same idea. Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Eliezer say, ne'emenet, and over there, Rebbe Yeshua says also, not ne'emenet. And Rebbe Yehuda claims that Shmuel Paskin, that the halacha is like Rebbe Gamliel in that case. And what's more, what happened was that then Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda came to Rav Yehuda. Remember, Rav Yehuda was called Sharpie because he was like really smart. And he said to him, listen, Shinana, you once told us that the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel in the previous case, the mission that we're learning right now about the Ta'anat Betulim, so that it's Af Parishona. When you say Af Parishona, meaning that even though we ought to say that there's a cheskas mamon, and that therefore afagav the ikalamemar ukimamon becheskas more, where that's a much bigger question. We're trying to take money out of a guy's account. We're not just trying to say, do we have a reason to believe that this child is a mamzer? We have no such chazaka, but we do have a chazaka that the money should stay in your bank account. And even there, Rabbi Gamliel says, Bori v'shema bori adif. So we see that Shmuel agrees that bori is even motzi mama. And that's what you said. And therefore, what we're saying over here, now you'll ask on me, but wait a minute. Didn't we have just a few dafim ago that Shmuel says that if a guy said lo matzati betulim, that he is believed even to be mafsid or ksuva. So how in the world all of a sudden does Shmuel turn around and say the opposite? Because there's two completely different cases. In the case over there, remember, she did not say an explanation. She just, either she said nothing or she said, no, I was a basula, right? But over there, it's a bori vabori. He's saying, I know you weren't. So there's no reason why that should be a stira to what's happening now. Now, apparently, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Gamliel and bori v'shem bori adif, even to be motzi mama. That's what seems to be saying over here. So says the Gemara, but this is very strange, because now it turns out that Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna, who were arguing with Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan, the whole machlokas is a machlokas in a Mishnah. I never heard of such a thing. Usually we ask it as a question. Why would Amorayim be arguing in a machlokas Tanayim? And that's basically what you're saying. You're saying that Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna were going on Libet Rav Gamliel, who says that Bori Vashema Bori Adif, and therefore we accept what she's saying. And Reb Nachman and Reb Yochanan were saying like Reb Yoshua. Never heard of such a thing, says Reb Nachman. That's because you don't understand what's going on. I was going Afilo the Reb Gamliel. And when I talked to you about the case where we said, you owe me money, and the guy says, well, I don't know, maybe, I don't know anything about it. That case is not the same as the case in the Mishnah at all. And that's been the problem all along over here, is that people don't understand the Mishnah and they're jumping to conclusions about Bori Vashema. So may I kindly point out to you that the cases are entirely different. Now, the reason that the cases are entirely different is because we did not take into consideration the issue of Migo. Remember that Migo, now, the Migo that we're talking about over here, I must warn you, is not the normal Migo. Normally, a Migo means like this. If a person has a better taina in court that would grant him a judgment in his favor, and he doesn't use that taina, then we give him the strength of that taina. That's what usually a Migo means. In this case, we don't have that kind of Migo, as we'll see. Furthermore, there's another very important limitation to a Migo, which is that normally we paskin ein Migo lahotzi. A Migo doesn't work to take money out of a bank account. So, which is exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to use a Migo to take money from this guy who is now going to have to pay the ketuvah. The Migo in this case is a Migo that would not normally be acceptable. But what we're going to be talking about is a case of Bori Vashema where the taina of the Bori is backed up by an additional better taina. Better for some reason. Not necessarily better that it would be automatically acceptable. And that's a different kind of Migo. And we're going to use it to back up the Bori even though it's against the cheskas maman and it's going to be motzi maman. So clearly what the Gemara is looking into over here is an additional factor. It's not looking into a separate question about whether we'll believe amigo. So all that Rav Huna is saying over here is that, listen, what Rav Nachman is saying over here, listen, in general, I certainly would never say that you'd be able to be motzi maman on the basis of Bori Vashem. Normally, I would have said that the halakha is not like that. But in this case, I would have agreed with Rabbi Gamliel. Because at kan lo kamar Rabbi Gamliel hasam, why do we believe the wife in this case? Because she has a much better thing to say. And if she wanted to say something, she should have said that she was not raped at all. She should have said that she was a mukas eitz. Yes, it's true, there was no dam, but I had an accident. Now, why is that better? That's better because then she's not creating any problems for a kohen, right? In the next Mishnah where she's saying, oh, he was completely, we were talking before, which we mentioned before, that she is saying that she was a mukas eitz. and the guy is saying, maybe you had slept with another man, there's also a migo, because she could have said that I was a mukas eitz before you even gave me eris, and therefore there wouldn't have been any question of taking less than the full value of the matayim. So even though this is not the normal migo, because you wouldn't have been automatically ne'emenet, and you're not really changing anything to say that you're a mukas eitz, because even the mukas eitz would be the same position as having been the nistafcha sadecha with the rape. So what's the difference? For another issue, that she doesn't put herself in a position being asura to kohen. And furthermore, you're going to be using it to be motzi. That's good enough to back up the bari. And it gives the bari just the additional sense that is required to believe a bari against the Shema, even to be motzi. That's all that I was saying, says Rav Nachman. And in no way is this related to the machlokas in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, I certainly would have gone for Rabbi Gamaliel, despite the fact that I do not believe that bari v'shama bari adif lahotzi. Says the Gemara, you know what? Of course that must be true. Certainly that is what Rav Nachman would say, and certainly that's the way we looked at it, and I'll prove it to you. That Rav Nachman must have been going alibi to Rav Gamaliel as well, because if not, if you want to believe that Rav Nachman was not taking into consideration the migo in the Mishnah, and that's how he understands Rav Gamaliel, then we have a real problem, because the rules of Psak Halacha would then create a kasha hilchata hilchata. Because on the one hand, remember, we have a general rule that the halacha goes aliba to Rav Nachman in financial matters. So that would mean that when it comes to bari v'shama, we do not say bari adif to be motzi moma. And yet, the other case, which is the Rabbi Gamaliel case, which seems to be the same case, if you don't take into consideration the migo, we know that Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, we just had that, he paskin like Rabbi Gamaliel. So which way is it? El alav shmamina, that it's both ways, because there's no contradiction. The din is like Rav Nachman, but bari v'adif, we don't say bari adif. And the din is like Rav Gamaliel, that we do say bari adif, but only in the event that there was a migo, which Rav Nachman himself would have agreed to. Shmamina, that is absolutely correct in saying what you said. Now the question is, what about the other issue? Is she muteret to him in the event that it would not be a sfeik sfeika? In other words, these halakas that have to do with mamon, would we say that because of this psak in mamon that we're also going to be paskening that in terms of the iser, that she is muteret to him, or do we have the same suffix that we always had? This is a major machlokas rishonim that a lot of rishonim get involved in, and the truth is that the Ruba of the Rishonim agree that yes, she would be muteret over here where we have this Nigu as well.